Thank you very much, and good afternoon. My colleague is not able to be here. She's going to Sigma Theta Tau. We both can't go to everything. So just briefly, welcome to Southern California, although I suspect today outside it's pretty much like that. We have no disclosures to make. So just for a bit of background, we already know that poverty is a very influential social determinant of health. And according to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are many characteristics, and also, as you know, there are many definitions of poverty. So there can be absolute poverty thresholds versus relative poverty thresholds, annual poverty rates, average monthly poverty rates, chronic and long-term poverty, and the federal poverty level are just a few of the terms that can be defined. Social determinants of health by WHO is defined as the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age, and the fundamental drivers of those conditions. So some of the factors would be neighborhood features, whether there's walking or recreation, socioeconomic, income, education, wealth, housing, how available is it, what condition is it in, social policies such as racial discrimination. And there are strong links between poverty and health, and that has been observed over the centuries. That's nothing new. Public health nurses provide care for people in all socioeconomic levels, including people in poverty. People in poverty often feel that healthcare providers are frequently insensitive to their needs and to their concerns. And public health nursing faculty, of which I am one, needs to address those poverty related to health issues with their students. So as a part of the students' clinical experience, we are using a 4-hour poverty simulation. It was developed to expose students to people living in poverty and to explore their attitudes about those people living in poverty. So this simulation, like I said, is a 4-hour event, and the students were asked to complete the Attitudes Toward Poverty scale, which some of you are probably familiar with. The original scale is the one that we used. We did not use the 21 item that's the shortened form. This was first published in 1993, and in looking back, it was developed in the late 1980s to 1990 because it was first submitted for publication in 1992 and then finally published in 1993. So we know that this scale is 25 years old. The reliability had a Cronbach's alpha of 0.93 and a split half of 0.87. And the validity also had a Cronbach's alpha of 0.989, just affirming the internal consistency of the tool. So the students meet for this 4-hour session, and the first half hour we brief the students and about the simulation, about what's going to happen. And the students are already in their clinical groups of 3 or 4 students per group, and they choose a family. So when they choose a family, they get an envelope that looks something like this. And in that envelope comes a few other items. For example, this is their WIC envelope. This is their cash envelope. And then they also have another really interesting envelope that contains the family jewels. That's in case they need to head to the pawn shop. This particular family that I have brought with me today does not have any school children, but it has a young baby. All of the family members have to stay together. They can't send mom off to do something, or the children off to do something, or dad off to do something. Or if it's a single parent, they can't send the children to school and mom goes somewhere else. They have to stay together during this whole simulation. The students are always given an opportunity of who wants to go first. And a lot of the groups want to go first. They want to get on with this project because every week only allows them for 40 minutes. So they've got a lot to accomplish in that week. However, the families that choose to go first are then reminded that they had kids who got into trouble. So that means that they probably have some extra stops along the way. So this is a group of students here now learning about their family. As you can see, they have the envelope out. The envelope comes with rules. It comes with a description of the family, and they need to spend some time figuring out who is in the family and which one of them is going to take which role as they proceed through this event. We have a bus. We have actually two buses, and they only accommodate five families, and they only travel in one particular route. We do this all in our School of Nursing building. By the way, we use our conference rooms, we use some of the classrooms that are not scheduled at this particular time, and we do this all in our own building. So this is a picture of a family group going with the bus driver is the young man in front. And they cannot go, obviously, ahead of him, and they can only get off the bus when he stops. These are just various stations that the families have to stop at depending on the members of the family. So they may be needing to stop at the welfare office where they get not only their aid money but their annual Medicare benefits. They can take a survey. They may get assigned to a counselor. They may get approved or they may get disapproved. As you know, when you're working with families in poverty, all of those things can happen. Here's the grocery store. So we have two chatty clerks there, and one of them is in training, so she's asking a lot of questions, and actually, in this picture, it looks like she's spending a little bit more time on her phone than she is paying attention to the customers who've come into the grocery store. WIC vouchers are accepted here. Here's the counselor. So families may go for personal reasons, marital strife, child behavior issues, or maybe the court ordered it. Families have to pay bills. So this family group, the two young men are the family. The third member of that family is not shown in this picture. This is where they pay for their gas, their electricity, their car payments, whatever other payments they need to be making on a routine basis. The bills come due at different times. So some of the families will have their bills due at the first week, some have them due at the second week, third week, and fourth week. During the 4 hours, we cover a whole month. So they have to think about what stations they need to go to when, because if they go to them too soon, that particular stop, that station will kick them out and say, no, you're here in the wrong week, come back a different week. Here's the property manager. Here's where the mortgage or the rent gets paid. And if they don't meet the deadlines, then there are fines or there's late payment fees. And again, everybody's rent or mortgage is not due at the same time. The pawn shop, which I already mentioned, if they get really stressed with cash, they can take the family jewels there and get some cash as they may need. In the jewels packet, by the way, they're told the purple jewels are worth so much, the turquoise jewels are worth so much, the clear jewels are worth so much. Here's a school district office, and most families have at least one child that needs to either go in school or be in school or somehow needs to interact with the district office. Families go there to register their children for school and also for disciplinary action. And that may be included in the packet that they get, whether their child has disciplinary action needs or not. With families who have children 0 to age 5, they go to the WIC office. And the WIC office is managed like you would expect a WIC office to be managed. There are classes to take, there are quizzes to do, and some education needs to happen. As you can see, one of our students was quite bored with that. However, we got him involved when he had to take the quiz. He can't get out of there with going through the whole process. His family can't get the WIC money. We have a couple of other stations. We've got a payday advance station. So then the family has to fill out the paperwork for loans. We have a doctor's complex. Again, some of these people have on their family description have appointments. Some of the appointments are only once a month, some of them are twice a month, some of them are weekly, depending on what their physician has said and what's in their packet. We have a police officer, because sometimes families don't, or individuals in the families don't pay attention. So they don't pay for their fines, they get tickets for jaywalking, they may have interrupted the bus driver, so the police takes them to jail. And they get to spend some time there, many times because they've just argued with the wrong person. So the last 40 minutes of the experience is a wrap-up. And here they reassemble. Before they went out, before we even distributed the family packet, they took the ATP scale as pretest. When they came back, they took it as post-test. And then a debriefing session was held. They reflected on their simulation experience in poverty, and several themes emerged from their discussion. Here are several. Receiving government assistance is harder than people think. Poverty isn't about being lazy, and poverty creates a snowball effect in the family. The unexpected for us, because in the literature, what we had read was that students who go through a poverty simulation, their attitudes alter. That was not our experience. When we looked at the scores that they got on the pretest and the post-test of the ATP scale, we found no change in attitude. A paired samples t-test was done, and it indicated no improvement of our students' attitude toward people living in poverty. However, like we said before, they expressed in the debriefing that this was a good experience, that they really learned something about people in poverty, and they expressed some of the things that they learned about people in poverty. So this just created more questions for us. Why is there a disconnect between the scale scores and the verbal debriefing? Did the placement of the poverty simulation during the term affect the scores? Did the students remember what they had answered on the first time and repeat the same? Actually, the reason I put that in is because we did the pretest in a classroom, and then they went out around the school for this experience, and when they came back, I saw more than one student pick up their paper, which was put upside down where they had been sitting, turn it over to see what they had put the first time. Second time we did that, we did two separate pieces of paper. So they had their pretest on one sheet of paper, which we collected, which was numbered. Then we would hand them out the numbered, you know, according to their number for the post-test, so they couldn't turn it over and see what they had answered the first time around. But we were still doing it pretty much on the same day. So how much of their attitude was affected by their own socioeconomic level? We did not gather information that would answer that question. And because the scale was developed, as I mentioned, over 25 years ago, we wondered if it really captured the attitude of today's generation. After all, 25 years is a generation ago. And so that was one of our questions. And so we wondered, too, is the tool really valid to measure this particular population? So in conclusion, we have more work to do. We need to evaluate this poverty simulation as a learning experience. But based on student feedback, during the debriefing of the simulation was successful in sensitizing the students to the experiences of people living in poverty. But we need further study and further work to determine the real if the reliability and validity of these scales, the long scale that we're using, is current today. And these are our references. Thank you.